I'm Julianne DeLynn Hatton, and you're listening to Faith and Reason on the Mormon Faircast. This series will discuss the prophet Joseph Smith and the authenticity of the gospel he restored. I'll be speaking with Michael R. Ash, author of the book of Faith and Reason, 80 Evidences Supporting the Prophet Joseph Smith. Welcome back, Michael.
Thank you. Glad to be here again.
Today we'll be discussing the testimony of three witnesses that can be found in the front of the Book of Mormon.
Yeah, excellent topic. It's one of my favorites.
I'm going to start by reading a portion of what the witnesses actually wrote. "And we declare with words of soberness that an angel of God came down from heaven, and he brought and laid before our eyes, that we beheld and saw the plates and the engravings thereon, and we know that it is by the grace of God the Father and our Lord Jesus Christ that we beheld and bear record that these things are true." So basically, Michael, the witnesses testified in the name of God that, first of all, an angel appeared and brought the plates to Joseph Smith.
Right. Yeah. They testify that they actually saw an angel and, saw the angel turn the plates over and could see that they were authentic.
They heard the voice of God. Mm-hmm. And at that point, God commanded them to bear witness of this?
Yes. Yeah. Commanded them to bear witness. And they followed that commandment. They lived up to it.
Now, if Joseph Smith was a charlatan, wouldn't these guys have known it?
You know, I would think so. It's certainly possible in some ways that Joseph could have tricked him in other things, but, you know, he'd have to have a pretty elaborate setup to fool them with a voice from God, to see an angel. I don't think Joseph Smith was a master of special effects, and I don't think could have produced this type of thing. And of course, you know, critics will argue for hallucinations and stuff, but as we'll probably talk about, that doesn't really square up with what the witnesses claim happened as well. So I think that we have to take their testimony at face value, that they actually did experience this.
Let's start with Oliver Cowdery.
You know, it's interesting that out of the three witnesses, Oliver Cowdery and David Whitmer were very close to the same age as Joseph Smith. You know, a lot of times we see these pictures, especially of David Whitmer, we see him as an older man. And, you know, we think maybe he was a lot older, but he was a young person. In fact, I think born in the same year as Joseph Smith, Oliver Cowdery, maybe like a year later. Oliver Cowdery had moved to the vicinity there where Joseph was living and was looking for a place to stay. He was a school teacher, and he ended up staying with the Smiths, and that's when he heard about the golden plates and was very interested in what that was all about. And ended up becoming, of course, Joseph Smith's scribe and became a very important leader in the early part of the church.
Let's talk about what he saw and did.
Oliver Cowdery was a witness to the process of the translation and, of course, sat there by Joseph Smith as Joseph Smith read off the plates. I mean, most of the Book of Mormon is in Oliver Cowdery's handwriting as it was dictated from the mouth of Joseph. In fact, years later, Oliver Cowdery even said that I basically wrote the Book of Mormon as the words fell from the prophet's lips, you know, that he penned it. And that's true. The biggest bulk of it was him recording it. So he had firsthand experience of listening to the prophet and being able to see what was going on. And he wanted to see the plates, but of course, you know, he was forbidden to do so. Joseph was commanded not to show the plates to anybody else. And, you know, that was honored up until the Lord said that Joseph could choose three witnesses to view the plates. And Oliver Cowdery was so close to this that he was selected to be one of them.
What was the problem that Oliver Cowdery eventually had with Joseph Smith and the church?
There was a time right after the Kirtland financial crisis. There was a bank failure then. Joseph had warned the people a little bit about it. There was some money speculations going on. People had a lot of investments of their money into this Kirtland Banking Society. And when it collapsed, you had a lot of people that were very upset, had lost a lot of money, including Joseph. He had lost a lot of money as well. And that kind of triggered an apostasy, basically, a big apostasy. And there were differences of opinion on how things should be run and who should be leaders. And there were hints of plural marriage. Joseph had received revelation on this stuff and kept it pretty much quiet for a number of years. And so all three witnesses actually left pretty close to the same time. And Oliver Cowdery was excommunicated. He had charged Joseph with a number of different things and, you know, pretty much claiming that he was a false prophet for the most part. And he basically didn't appear at the council that convened on it. And so he was excommunicated. And, you know, he went a separate way. And like I said, he wasn't the only one. That was about the same time as the other witnesses and several other leaders left. It was a bad time for the church. I'm sure that Satan was probably chuckling, and there was people in the area thinking that this might be the collapse of the church. But, the Lord found a way to work through it and, of course, brought some of the witnesses back.
I think it's interesting that Cowdery ended up coming back to the church after all that he had been through.
Yeah, he was gone for, I think, near a decade, maybe about 8 years from the church. And when he came back, he ended up coming back in full fellowship and gave a talk at a conference there where he mentioned again the Book of Mormon and how he was there and sat next to Joseph and recorded this information. So he returned and died in full fellowship, but he had a lapse there, like sometimes people even do today and can return, so.
He testified in his dying breath.
Yes, he did testify in his dying breath. And that's one of the things that we find as kind of a regular theme throughout many of these witnesses, is they testified not only many times in their lives, but when their last statement could be made, they made a point to say, you know, I've put my stamp on this of approval that is authentic, this really happened to me. You know, like critics think, why didn't these witnesses turn against them? Well, because they would have been branded as liars and as cheats, as part of this fraud that Joseph Smith would have, perpetrated. And so that's why they had to stick with their story. But they would have been hailed as heroes mm-hmm. if they would have come forward. If Oliver or David Whitmer or Martin Harris would have said, well, Joseph was smart, he was conniving, I fell for it, he tricked us, you know, he used me. Everybody would have said, hey, you know, welcome back. You're a hero for turning him in and exposing him. But they were ridiculed not only as members of the church, but they were ridiculed when they weren't members of the church. And it would have been so much easier to flip at that point and say, you know, yeah, you're right, I was tricked. You know, people do that nowadays, you know, that you buy a car or you invest money with somebody that steals your money. You don't defend them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to see them go to jail and say, yeah, he tricked me. You know, he was a con man. And so they could have done the same thing, but they never did because they knew that it was true.
Let's move on to Martin Harris. He was a farmer.
Yeah, he was a farmer, and he was the oldest. He was about 20 years, roughly, older than the rest of the group. And Joseph had met him originally digging a well, and Martin had heard about the plates, and that's when he wanted to become involved and said, what was this all about? And he was the first scribe and recorded some parts of the Book of Mormon that are now lost, you know, the 116 pages, you know, he was working with him and of course said, I need to show these to my wife, Lucy, because she doesn't believe it. And Joseph was asking Martin to help out financially on this, mm-hmm. on this process. So he ended up losing the 116 pages and he was replaced as a scribe, but nevertheless, he still had a strong part in the process of the Book of Mormon come forth. He eventually mortgaged his farm, got, I believe it was about $3,000 to help print the Book of Mormon. And like Oliver Cowdery, right around the time of the banking society that collapsed, he also fell away and left the church and was very angry with Joseph and disagreed with him about a lot of different things and had wanted nothing to do with him. And now he was gone for quite a bit longer. He was gone for, if I'm not mistaken, in the neighborhood of about 30 years. He was a much older man when he traveled to Utah and wanted to come back into the fold of the saints. There was a time when he was out of the church and he was with a bunch of buddies and he got drunk and they were asking about the gold plates. And so they tried to, you know, kind of tease it out of him. He says, you know, come on now, Martin, you know, you don't really believe this story about the gold plates coming from an angel. You didn't really see that. You're just kind of imagining it. And he got upset. He says, I saw it just as I would see anything. I mean, it was there. I actually saw an angel. It was the brightness of the day. I stood in the presence. And so he defended again in his life and in his death the witness that he had.
It's funny that these men were hounded their entire life about Joseph Smith and the plates.
I mean, it was kind of a big thing in the neighborhood, and especially when you had somebody that's no longer a member. You know, it's like, you know, how about spilling the beans and telling us really what went on? And they would defend their testimonies, and they defended it all the way to the end.
David Whitmer is the witness that never returned to the church. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, he left, and also, like Oliver Cowdery and Martin Harris, was angry and never came back, though. He lived in Richmond, and he ended up becoming a very notable citizen there. He was mayor at one point. He owned a livery stable, so he was a well-known businessman and had quite a reputation for being honest and high moral standing in the community. There was an article, I believe, in an encyclopedia that was written at the time that basically said that David Whitmer had denied the testimony. And the local non-Mormon newspaper responded on the front page and said that his reputation was without stain or blemish. And they had many people that signed it and said that we believe that David Whitmer is honest and that he is not a liar. So even though they didn't believe that the Book of Mormon was true, or probably didn't believe that he maybe had seen an angel, they believed that he believed it and that he was not a liar, and they didn't know how to explain it. And if that's really what many of the critics, same problem they face today. They don't know how to explain it, so they try to, you know, come up with some sort of theory that it was, you know, hallucination or whatever. But none of these people that knew David Whitmer believed that he had lied about it. And, you know, he testified that to his dying days as well.
He gave over 70 interviews, according to your book. And I would think in those interviews, if there was any problems or any sort of con, that would have come out.
Yeah, exactly. They call him the most interviewed witness because he was. He constantly would, because he lived in the area for a long time. And again, he was a non-Mormon. People would come to him and ask him, you know, hey, give me the real scoop on this, since you were there when all this happened. And he didn't follow the church anymore. He rejected it. But he could not deny that he saw an angel, that he saw the golden plates, that it was real. And it wasn't an illusion. He made a point of that at several times to say that there's no way that he had been deceived or hallucinated, that he actually had seen the plates. And it made him angry when somebody would try to suggest otherwise. And again, if this had all been a con, or if he had been part of it in any way, or even assumed that Joseph Smith had played a trick on him, he didn't like Joseph anymore, didn't want anything to do with him, he could have said, man, he was clever. You know, he really tricked me. People wouldn't have been angry at all. They would have been happy that he would reveal this information. But he couldn't do it because he knew that he had been commanded to testify and he was not going to do otherwise.
So when we hear criticisms today about the three witnesses and that they were conned, or that there was some kind of a delusion going on, how do you answer that?
Well, what I find fascinating that the Lord set this up is because he had not only the three witnesses, but the eight witnesses to kind of counterbalance this. And the three witnesses, theirs had a completely spiritual component, is that they saw an angel, they saw the plates, they saw the angel turn over the pages so they could see that it was actually this written book, and they knew it was true. And like I said, there's no way any historian can really go through the evidence and claim that this was anything but what they actually believed had happened. You know, that there wasn't a deceptive ploy. And critics can argue, well, somehow they were in some sort of groupthink, group hallucination or hypnosis or whatever, because it was kind of what all happened in a spiritual sense with this angel there. That's where it comes in with the testimony of the eight witnesses that actually saw and handled plates. There was no spiritual element then. They didn't see an angel. They didn't hear a voice, but they handled these plates. And so you have actual witnesses that claim that there was metal plates with the appearance of gold with engravings on it, on one hand, to prove that these things physically existed, and then you have the select group of three testifying that these plates had come from an angel of God. And when you combine these two together, it is very difficult to come to any other conclusion that this really happened. And the eight witnesses, of course, they never denied their testimony either. They talked about it through their lives as well, and even into their dying days. So the critics have to grasp at some sort of straw and come up with these imaginary theories, because there's nothing else that fits the evidence as well as the story that we learned from LDS history.
Thank you, Michael Ash.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Faith and Reason on the Mormon Faircast. I'm your host, Julianne DeLynn Hatton, inviting you to keep the faith.
Michael R. Ashe is the author of the book Shaken Faith Syndrome, Strengthening One's Testimony in the Face of Criticism and Doubt, as well as the book Of Faith and Reason, 80 Evidences Supporting the Prophet Joseph Smith. Faith and Reason is produced by Tom Hatton with music courtesy of Arthur Hatton. The opinions expressed in this podcast are not necessarily the views of Fair Mormon or The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. You can support this podcast by subscribing to it in iTunes and by rating it and writing a review. Questions or comments can be sent to podcast@fairmormon.org, or you may join the conversation at fairblog.org.